begin the committee for policy and changes on the chancellor search. And if we could have a roll call, please, Winter.
Chair Brager?
Here.
Regent Arascada?
Here.
Regent Downs?
Here.
Regent Goodman?
Here.
Regent McMichael?
Here.
You do have a quorum.
Brager, and if we could have a roll call, please, Winter. Regent Arascada? I don't know what that is. Okay, thank you very much for that. What we are going to do, have the Pledge of Allegiance, and I would like to, after that, if everyone could please remain standing for a minute, I would like to just acknowledge those that we have lost and those that were affected by the community at large, and our UNLV family. Amy, would you like to do the pledge? Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. We may be seated. I just want to take a moment to say we know that this has been a very difficult week. We have complete compassion and care as the Board of Regents and staff, and to all those affected, we send out our deepest condolences, thoughts, and prayers. And thank you all for us being able to have this meeting today. So thank you all very much. Before we continue on with the actual meeting, we'll do the land acknowledgement and take a moment to recognize that here in Nevada, we stand on the land of the Washishu, Nuwu, Niwi, and Nuwu of the different Indian reservations that are throughout our state. So thank you so much for that. And we honor their stewardship that continues into today with this recognition. We state an intention to rightfully include their voice and respect them as the 27 sovereign tribal nations of Nevada. Thank you so much for that. What we're going to do now is we're going to go to item number one for any public comment at this. Go ahead, sir. Oh, I know I need to do the chair. I knew you said that and I didn't. I was going to do it after. That's okay. For those who would like to call in, offer public comment, please dial 669-444-9171 and enter the meeting ID 928-4944-5069, and the passcode is 555-555. And I will ask for comments for the first meeting sites of, is there any comments at GBC?
There is no public comment at GBC at this time.
Thank you. Is there any public comment at the system office in Reno?
Yes, there is.
Thank you. If they would like to go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Jim New, Nevada Faculty Alliance. Over the past decade, NSHE has implemented a series of small policy changes that, in the aggregate, have significantly eroded shared governance when it comes to the process of selecting campus presidents and the system chancellor. The policies that once mandated national searches for NSHE leadership positions have quietly undergone multiple small changes since 2012 and now give the regents the authority to immediately appoint individuals in an interim capacity, potentially avoiding a search altogether. Individually, each change as it was being adopted appeared relatively benign. But the cumulative effect is a system where comprehensive searches to fill the top spots at our institutions may be the exception rather than the rule. This shift in policy effectively diminishes the scope and opportunity for meaningful faculty engagement in the crucial task of selecting campus leaders, a foundation of shared governance. With 18 months to go before the next known presidential vacancy, there really is no good justification for not planning a national search to replace that individual, and it should begin no later than October 2024. NFA strongly urges the board to modify Title II, Chapter 1, Section 1.5 to require a national search for a president or a chancellor when you become aware of a pending vacancy more than 9 months before it occurs. Anything less is a betrayal of the critical partnership between faculty, students, and administrators that is necessary to maintain an effective system of higher education. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else up in Reno?
No, there is not.
Thank you very much. We will now go to public comment in Las Vegas. Okay, seeing no public comment in Las Vegas, is there any comment on the phone?
There's none at this time.
Thank you very much. We will then move on through our agenda to item number two. Introductions and open meeting law. What we're going to do for this committee is we have legal counsel from Mr. Wixom that is going to be present here with us to not only guide us but make sure that we are following the open meeting law. I would just like to state that I'm really excited for this committee. I think and know that it'll be a very open process. We're excited for any changes, and what I will do, I will first have Mr. Wixom speak, and then I will go to board members, and after that, I'm happy to open that up to our regents for any questions or comments they might have. So we will do that in that order. So, Mr. Wixom.
Thank you, Regent Brager. Michael Wixom, for the record, and she counsel regarding these matters. We thought it would be helpful to begin with a general outline of the procedures that are in place. These materials will look familiar to you. We've reviewed them once already, but we, as a board, as a whole, but we thought we would review it on a more granular basis as we begin our work here. As a matter of process, I've identified five or six areas based on my review that I believe require some clarification. There are ambiguities there that could give rise to issues. That's more of a legalistic approach. In addition, there are some policy issues that we can discuss as we go through as to how the committee believes the search could be more effectively structured. As we begin, all of this, what the materials that you have include a general outline along with the specific code provisions, so you'll receive two packets of information. As we begin a search process, the board shall determine whether to conduct a national, regional, in-state, or other search for a permanent chancellor, and whether the committee shall be aided by a search consultant. I need to stop for a minute and identify the first ambiguity, and that is, if you'll turn to your materials, this is in section 5, 1.5.4D, and it begins with the phrase, whenever a vacancy occurs or is about to occur in the position of chancellor, the board shall, at the next regular or special meeting of the board, consider whether it would request recommendations for an acting chancellor or an interim chancellor. The issue that we face is I don't know what it means to say that a vacancy has occurred or is about to occur. That's ambiguous, and it gives rise to some potential issues. And I think, as the outset, that is one clarification that we may need to drill down on a more granular level, is identifying what it means to say that a vacancy occurs or is about to occur and how that impacts the search process. So that would be the first item. The second item is before you on the screen. If the board determines to use a search consultant, the search consultant shall be selected by the chancellor, the chief of staff, special counsel to the Board of Regents, and the chief general counsel. There are two issues in that clause that could be clarified, I believe, and also in consultation with Regent Brager, it may require some additional policy changes. For example, if you determine that you're going to use a search consultant, How are you going to identify the search consultant? How will you evaluate the search consultant? Who selects the search consultant? What's the process that you go through in identifying the search consultant? There, it provides that the search consultant shall be selected by the chancellor, the chief of staff, and special counsel to the Board of Regents. So the first issue is, who goes through that process? Should the committee select the consultant, or should those individuals select the consultant? The rationale behind those individuals selecting the consultant is that it's not then open to the open meeting law. If the committee selects a consultant, then you would have to go through a two-step process. Some individual, presumably the chair of the committee and chief of staff, would identify a series of candidates for the search consultant position, and they would come back and the committee would evaluate the candidates as a whole. That's one area. The other area that could require some clarification is there's a phrase that's used throughout the code, special counsel to the Board of Regents, but that term is never defined. I don't know what that means. In the past, I guess right now that's me, but there's no definitive process to identify that. In the past, the chief general counsel has taken that role, or an attorney within the system at the behest of the chief general counsel. So that area could require some clarification. The board chair then selects the committee. We have step four is the appointment of the chair of the committee. Step five, and this is where I think we could have an area for rich discussion, I believe, and that's the role of the advisory committee and how the advisory committee functions and how you want to utilize the advisory committee. And so that would be an area that you could have some significant discussions about. The next area is this clause: the Regents Chancellor Search Committee will oversee the details of the search. I don't know what that clause means. I don't know what it means to oversee the details of the search. I don't know how that interacts. There's some ambiguity there that could be clarified, and I think it would be helpful if we did have that clarification. The rest of the matters, I think, are relatively straightforward. We've identified the ambiguities that need to be clarified. The next question is how you want to go through the process. For example, there's a discussion about blind searches and how blind searches work and operate. Blind searches can have two different dimensions under the open meeting law. Now, I will say, just as a matter of general policy, the minute that you have more than one region involved in the process, you have a committee. Also, if the committee is appointed by the board, then that committee becomes subject to the open meeting law. So there are some open meeting law issues throughout this process that we have to be cognizant of and aware of so that we don't run afoul of the open meeting law and create issues inadvertently for ourselves as we go forward. Now, I'm going to stop for just a minute and again just reiterate, there has been discussion about blind searches, and blind searches in and of themselves do not violate the open meeting law, but you have to be careful in the sense that the first type of a blind search is where you would create a series of qualifications and then delegate the search to one particular regent and have that regent go out and hire the person and then report back to the board. That would not violate the open meeting law, but it would also prevent the participation of the rest of the board in the process. The second kind of a blind search is a search in which qualifications are brought forward without names. And so you would bring an individual candidate forward. You could have 5 or 6 or 10 or 15 or whatever, but they would have a series of qualifications. The problem that you have is the more granular the qualifications become, the more transparent the individual is, and it becomes less blind as you go through that process. And so that becomes a challenge. So if you're going to go through that kind of a blind search as a general matter, if you want to get to a granular level, then the identity of the individual would pretty easily be ascertained, and they would be hesitant to, I would imagine, to go through the process on that basis. So with that general explanation, I'm going to stop for a moment and ask if you have any questions or if you have additional areas that you would like to explore.
Okay, is there any questions from any of the committee members at this time?
I do have a question.
Regent Downs?
For the record.
Go ahead.
Yes. So when you mentioned the blind searches, and maybe this is for the next phase of this meeting, so I apologize if I'm in the wrong spot to ask this, but with a blind search, do you, when you're just given qualifications of the individual, do you have, will we know if there's a background on the individual, like this person was dismissed from an institution under a cloud, or is that something that the search firm would vet out for us?
You could include that as part of the vetting process, but again, the more detailed and more granular you become in those details, the more transparent it is. And the idea behind, the rationale behind a blind search is twofold. First, that it becomes more impartial as a board, so the board is looking then. The idea that the rationale behind the blind search in that context would be that the board would be making a decision solely on qualifications and no other factor. But the other problem in that regard is the individual whose name is part of the search process, as a general practice, they don't want their name, they don't want their present employer to be aware that they're involved in a search, because it would jeopardize their present employment. And so if they go into this process, and generally they'll allow themselves, their names to be public at the last stage when they're in the final two or three as a finalist. And that's just part of the process, and they understand that. But if they're in the final 10 or 12 and their name becomes known because the blind search becomes, quote, blind, unquote, search becomes so granular that their name becomes apparent, then that becomes an issue for them. And I can say, because of the searches that I've worked on before, I know that search committees watch this process nationally. They're looking for their candidates. They want to know if people that are part of their group of candidates that they work with are part of somebody else's group. They want to know what their people are doing so that they can keep track of them. And so they're going to be watching this process very, very close. And so if you go to that process, you need to understand, and without making a judgment on the policy itself, because that's not my place, but you need to go into an understanding that they would be reluctant, my experience tells me, to be part of the search where their name is going to be known at that level. And you would want, the other side of that is you would want to have enough information as a board to make a quality decision. And that gets back to the point that you raised, Regent Down. Those are factors that you would want to know. And you could go to the search consultant and say, we don't want to have anybody who's been called into question because of certain activities. But the problem with that is that there may well be an explanation. I mean, and it could be later a satisfactory explanation to you after you look at the details of the matter. I'm going to stop. Does that respond to your question?
It does, but I have a follow-up question.
Please.
When you mentioned that the information we would get about any candidates in the blind search would include qualifications, so I'm assuming that wouldn't be like this person was the president of, like, some Virginia State University. I'm making something up, but it wouldn't say that information. I assume it would be that this person was at a state university level position. Is that how they wash it down so we don't get too much detail?
That would be typically the way you would do it, but you would create those procedures and that framework, that rubric at the beginning of the process. And so you would agree that we won't name the institution, but we would want to know enough about the institution so that we would know that the institution is similar to the institution that you're doing, for which you're doing the search.
Okay, thank you.
Vice Chair Escada.
Thank you, Regent Brager. One of the items in which Regent Downs just identified was the apprehension of qualified candidates applying for this type of position. If there's going to be repercussions from their application And then the trickle-down effect in which their campus or their current employer finds out that they have applied rather than just being in the final three when they're duly notified, there could be an apprehension for qualified candidates to apply for this position. My other concern is the redacting of information that would be necessary to qualify as a candidate in which we would see as the qualified candidate because everything is going to be redacted. So, Council Wixom, from your experience, would it reduce or eliminate the qualified candidates from applying for this type of position, having the blind hiring?
Michael Wixom again for the record. When I was on the board, I participated, I think 12 or 13 searches. None of those searches were blind searches because that was not part of the board policy. And so I can't speak specifically to blind searches. I can speak conceptually to blind searches because, again, I was not part of a blind search. Based on what I know about blind searches, there are legitimate policy reasons to do a blind search, and I understand that. There are blind searches that can be done at different levels at the university, at an administrative level, when you're looking for a particular faculty position. And again, I'm not making a judgment on blind searches. I am just saying that blind searches have different implications in different parts of the institution. And so if you're doing a blind search for a president, in my experience, that would be more of a challenge because with the president, you're going to want community input, for example. It would be difficult for an advisory committee to participate and make an evaluation. It would be difficult for the advisory committee to make a judgment about an individual that they don't know. And you could try to have, I suppose, a blind search on a two-step process, do a blind search for the final and for the initial applicant pool and do a blind an in-person search for the second part of the pool. That's one possibility. I've not thought through the implications of those entirely, but that is one possibility. You would still have some of the same issues with the initial search, blind search that I identified before, and that's the granularity of the search. For example, if an employer would find out that one of the employer's employees has been involved in five or six or seven searches, that becomes an issue for the individual, and they're going to be reluctant to participate in that. Is that responsive to your question, Regent Ariscotta?
It is, and it's quite well, thank you. But the redacting so much information about the quality of the candidate could also be detrimental to the search because we may, all the information pertinent to the position itself may not be available because it's completely redacted from publications to locations they've worked, from referrals in which they're placing. We want to make sure that we have the most qualified candidate and to have the confirmation of each of the board members or the chancellor's search committee, the individuals that have been appointed or assigned to lead the search, having that non-disclosure and having the confidentiality to assure that each candidate will not have their information exposed is going to be, it may be the best way to get the highest quality candidate.
Regent Brager, if I may respond, that would be a policy judgment, and that's not my role to evaluate a policy judgment in that regard. I understand what you're saying, but again, I couldn't respond specifically because that would be the role of the board and not my role. I would caution you, Regent Ariscotta, with that response, and the entire committee as we go through this process, we need to be careful. If you go that route, we would have to look at this very carefully from the open meeting law perspective and make sure that the whole process doesn't inadvertently create an open meeting law issue. Because as I said before, the minute the regents participate in the process on any level other than one regent, then you have an open meeting law issue. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other questions from committee members? I will come back around after we go through the meeting to hear from any non-committee regent members. So we're going to move on to item number three, is review and discussion of the current policy governing chancellor searches. And I'm just going to say, I might not say just one thing, but for right now, if we look at, it's on page, if you all looked at all the material, page 10 of, to me, this is one of the main items that if we could have a really, we can have a lot, a good discussion on anything, and then anything that we discuss today, we would ask for staff then would bring back some recommendations to the full board, and then all this would be gone over by the full board. But item G, in regards to one of the biggest concerns that I heard, was a consultant, and that can change. So if that's something we as this committee would like to bring forward to the full board, it could be that whomever is on the committee to actually look for a chancellor and decide how that is taken care of, that we could then change that to where the committee could get three or four from the chancellor, the chief of staff, and the chair of the board, and then we would have an open meeting discussion and ask questions that would be very appropriate. And that is a change that I'm told by legal counsel can take place. So I think we need to look at that seriously. I think it'd be more open. I think all board members would feel more comfortable, and we'd be able to ask questions such as, what successes have you had? Where are they now? Where have they stayed? And we'd be able to get a search firm if we chose to. This is one option. There are people in our state that have done searches. So I'm saying, as an open situation, locally, nationally, and statewide, those are our options. So that's just one thing that I'd like to make sure before our meeting is over at 10:30, is one of the items that I think is very important to be more inclusive instead of exclusive.
Regent Rager?
Yes, sir.
May I insert just a general observation
to
give some guidance in that regard? If you take that approach, it would be similar to the approach that you use when you hire an investment manager for the investment committee, for example.
Right.
When you have the investment committee hires an investment manager, they'll have different companies that will come forward and make a presentation, and then the committee will make a selection of the investment manager based on that presentation. And that would be the format that you would use. So you would have, procedurally, you would have an initial screening process so that the chair and staff and secretary of the board would identify these companies. So there would still be a process under which a single regent would identify the companies, but then those companies would be brought back to the chair as a whole.
Right.
I hope that helps.
No, that's exactly how I'm thinking, if I didn't say that correctly. But I think that would be very important to make sure that we have a more open way of doing this. Regent Downs.
Thank you, Chair Brager. And I'm not sure how do I identify Mr. Wixom. Is it Chief to Counsel to the Board Wixom? I want to make sure we're appropriate with this. But I have a question for you about this.
Go ahead.
Okay. So regarding the if we were to do have the committee choose the search firm, how much time? You mentioned it would be a two-step process, so we have to introduce it and come back and vote on that. How much time would have to elapse between those two meetings to follow the open meeting laws at a week? Just because that could slow down the process, but I mean, maybe that's something we would want to do. What is the required amount of time between the two meetings to make that selection?
Well, you've got, thank you, Michael Wixom, for the record, and you can call me whatever you would like to call me, but I respond to anything. Regent Downs, you have two considerations. First, a legal consideration, and the second, a practical consideration. Getting ready, as you know, for a board meeting or a committee meeting is a very challenging process for staff. They have to assemble the agendas, they have to assemble the materials, and they have to put all of the materials together, make sure they comply with the open meeting law, and get them posted. And so operationally, that can be a challenge. So you have a practical challenge. From a legal perspective, it would be whatever the notice period is. I think in the past I've seen back-to-back meetings within a week, for example. So you could have one meeting, have a response to the direction of the committee or the board within the next day or so, and then post the meeting. So you would get the posting out within the open meeting law period. But that's a tight time frame. It would be, depending on how much you're asking the staff to do, it could be a challenge in that regard. Is that responsive?
It is. Thank you. I appreciate that. And a follow-up question to Ms. Niklajewski, Chief of Staff to the Board, Niklajewski. What would it be reasonable for your staff in doing a turnaround on that? Is a week? Is it 2 weeks? What would be something that would be manageable for your staff to be able to process?
Thank you for the question. Carrie Niklajewski, Chief of Staff to the Board. Just to back up just a little bit, I'm not totally certain that it would require two committee meetings, because certainly staff could issue an RFP and do an initial evaluation of the responses and then bring whatever's charged by the committee, 3 to 5 proposals forward. That could start, I think, without an initial committee meeting. And then, of course, you'd want to give the search consultants a couple of weeks to prepare a proposal and submit that back. So, and then it would just be a question of getting that meeting on the calendar and prepping. But the big piece of the work would be finalizing the initial RFP, pushing it out, and allowing some time for the search firms to respond.
And if I may, Regent Berger, just to qualify what I said earlier, Chief of Staff Niklajewski's observation is exactly right. You would go through an RFP process. And I didn't identify that earlier, but that is, what the process I'm describing assumes that you've gone through an RFP process. And so the committee would direct the issuance of an RFP, and then there would be a response to the RFP procedurally. So she's exactly right.
And right before I call I'd like to suggest this. A lot of times it works really well. Let's say we're starting in October to do a search. You can work backwards and plan your calendar, and it works really well that way. So you start from October of what you want the end result, and you work backwards to make sure that you have everything you need in place. That's just a suggestion that has worked well in the past on searches that I have done. So Vice Chair Escada.
Chair Berger, I don't want to interrupt. Regent Downs was going to follow up.
Thank you, Vice Chair Escada. Just sorry for all the questions. I guess what I'm trying to boil it down to is, what would be the time delay in having the search committee choose the search firm versus having the chair of the search committee choose the search firm? I mean, are we talking a week delay? Are we talking a month delay? And I realize we can back our calendar up to account for that, but is there an idea of what that looks like?
This is Regent Berger. I'm actually thinking, and we would make a decision that would come forward to the full board, that whoever is the search committee would then pick, would investigate the people and bring forward to the board. So it would not be one person, because it would be in the open. And I think that open meeting law is excellent for doing things that affect everyone. And so that's just my thought. That doesn't mean what we're doing. It's just my thought. So if that doesn't answer it, I can turn that over to Mr. Wixom.
Well, if I may, Michael Wixom, for the record, let me give you an example of what could happen initially. If you go back to the materials, the Chancellor's search outline, the board shall determine whether to conduct a national, regional, in-state, or other search. At that point in time, the board can also direct the issuance of an RFP for a search consultant. And so you could have those processes going on in tandem. In one of the public comments talked about mandate, and that this is a policy issue. I'm not opining as to a policy issue, but I'm just giving you an example. If, for example, the board policy was to require a national search under certain parameters, for example, for certain positions, part of the initial process would be that the board shall say, yes, we're going to do a national search. We hereby direct the Chief of Staff, Niklajewski, start the RFP process And so you would start that process. And so the very first meeting of this committee could be an evaluation of the responses to the RFP. So that could be a very telescoped down process. So an RFP generally, I mean, you could, there are national search consultants that you would identify. So you would publicize the RFP. I would guess it would be a matter of weeks. And then the first committee, you'd have a response to the RFP. You'd make your determination, select the search consultant, give the parameters to the search consultant, and then the search would start almost immediately. So it wouldn't necessarily extend the process if it was structured appropriately.
Does that help you, Regent Downs?
Yes, it does. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. I will go to Vice Chair Scotta. Did you have something else, sir?
Yes, ma'am. Council Wixom, to segue off what you said, as long as it's structured properly. So that way, what you're stating there is that the search committee would have the ability to not handcuff the search firm by having preset procedures or dictates concerning the process for the leadership profile. In addition to, from what it sounds like, is let the firm have input on every process and procedure right from the beginning, because the search firm has the expertise to do this rather than the search committee.
If I may respond.
Especially with OML mm-hmm. also.
Michael Wixom, for the record. Regent Arascotta, this is the way I would envision it based on experiences with prior searches. With the procedure that I just outlined, the board would say, for example, yes, we're doing a national search. They would direct staff to issue an RFP. The board chair would select the committee. The committee chair and the board chair would identify the first meeting of the committee. Between the initial board direction to set up the RFP or set up the committee and issue the RFP, the RFP would go out and we would have responses to the RFP. At the first meeting, the committee would identify a search consultant and set a time for the second meeting. The second meeting would include the advisory committee, and the advisory committee would then have the opportunity in connection with the members of the search committee to provide guidance to the search committee for what they're looking for. Now, my experience before is that the advisory committee would probably, if it's a good search consultant, the search consultant would give the advisory committee a general idea of what they would expect. And then the search consultant would use the input from the committee, the search committee itself and the advisory committee to create a profile that's acceptable to the committee as a whole. They would then use that profile to go out and start the search itself. And then I'll stop there because the rest of that process would be subject to how this committee determines the process should go. But that's how I would envision the process to start. The next question would be, and it's a procedural question, and that is, at what time do you start the search? Does it make a difference to start a search at a different time for a chancellor than you would a president, for example? What's the search season for a particular position? I don't know the answer to that question.
So what you're stating there is, although this may sound ambiguous, but start the search within the usual hiring or the hiring cycle for education. But in addition to that, would provide or generate a higher qualified candidates, regardless of being outside the typical cycle. So the search committee would have that capability or the authority to elect which time cycle they're going to hire the most qualified candidates in regards to the hiring cycle, the usual hiring ed cycle.
If I may respond, Regent Breger, Michael Wixom, for the record, I think that's accurate. Another factor you would have to take into consideration is the more time you have to conduct a search in advance of the vacancy, the greater the likelihood that you're going to have a quality pool of candidates. That's my experience. And so someone mentioned earlier the idea of understanding that a vacancy was coming down the road in a position that are 7 or 8 or 9 months from now. If you can time the search so that you're within the hiring cycle for that position, then the likelihood of having quality candidates, from my experience, would go up. And if you have that luxury. But one of the reasons that the board instituted the acting and interim chancellor positions was to allow for the timing of the search. So the idea was, if you appointed an interim or an acting, it wasn't just to try people out. It was to allow you time, to allow the board time to structure the search within a time frame that would bring forth the highest quality candidate. So it had two purposes, not just one.
Thank you. And Mr. Wixom, this question might be proposed to both yourself and Chief of Staff Nick Juski. What is the most common, what is the usual higher education hiring cycle? Do you have a time frame or can provide that for clarity?
Michael Wixom, for the record, I have heard a lot, but I'm not an expert in the field, and so I'm hesitant to opine because other people know more about that issue than do I. Chief of Staff Nicola Jowski, in candor, would have more information than I in that regard, and she may have a better feel because she's had extensive experience with search consultants and searches.
Mr. Arascotta, or Regent Arascotta, would you ask that question so we can hear that again?
Absolutely. Chief of Staff Nick Juski, just out of curiosity and actually of clarification for this committee, what are the most common search dates of search for the usual higher education hiring cycle? For the hiring cycle of higher education, for a position of chancellor or president, what are the dates or the most common time to post the position?
Thank you for the question that I don't honestly know the answer to. I can tell you that we've certainly started searches at different times, and that's been my experience. So I think Chancellor Charlton has a more appropriate answer than the one I just gave. Thank you.
Chancellor Charlton, please.
Certainly. Good morning, and for the record, Interim Chancellor Patty Charlton. I would suggest that the most important part of the search process, particularly for not just the chancellor but also for presidents, is one that lends itself to transparency and the most opportunity for inclusion and involvement from the stakeholders. And so typically I would suggest that you're looking at a time frame where you are able to engage with students, with faculty, and that would typically be a launch not later than, I would say, a fall semester, typically, because then you have the time for those stakeholders to be, one, involved in the process of building that profile of what's necessary and what's being looked for in that that highest level of executive leader, but also for them to participate throughout the process and not run the risk of having the search, for example, wind down after the spring semester, where honestly faculty and students have departed for their summer typically, or their availability is limited, but typically to start it not later than the beginning of the fall. You could be doing the RFP during the summer months, having the board select the consultant as well, but then also to, again, give that opportunity for as much involvement from those individuals that participate in the shared governance of an institution, and then also for your community stakeholders. But it's that time and that transparency that I would say would be most important. You do lose a lot of involvement when you go over a summer months, and so to have even final interviews done after faculty and students are gone can be very challenging and can be seen as not as transparent.
Thank you very much. And
Thank you.
Was there anything else from you, Vice Chair Arascotta? What I'm going to do is ask Regent Goodman gave some information that I believe is where I'm thinking for us, because it would be, I feel like, the perfect scenario, giving someone an opportunity. Why don't you share that information? And that way it would share how they would have the summer months.
Regent Goodman, for the record. Essentially, I actually did some research on this, on how timelines work. And just to give you an idea, October, you know, let's say you start in October. This is kind of what I've seen a lot of the different systems do. Start in October, you have a learning and listening session. Then you move over to a one-month period of defining exactly what the position entitles. Then you move over to building your candidate pool in a two-month period. And then you have another period where you're kind of vetting some of the information, at least the search committee is. And finally, you have this selection period that ends essentially in May, and then that chancellor is chosen. So it sounds like October really is a good start date. And then it's not brain science. There's stuff all over where we can really kind of follow best practices on how we move forward, or how we plan backwards to do an appropriate search that has that level of transparency and includes that hopeful RFP for a search firm. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that. And what I think is really great about that is then a new chancellor would have June and July to be able to meet staff, to be able to meet professors, to talk with students, to share a plan, and to work with the board. And so to me, that gives us a good time frame, and it's something that we can have discussion on. What I would like to state right now, as we get closer to 10 o'clock, I'd like to make sure that we answer, number one, all questions. Number two, that we give time for those that are not on the committee, and that by about 10:10, that we have the final discussion on what we would like to have staff put together to bring to the full board. So we have about 30 more minutes to be able to be very concise and decide how we would like this committee to finalize what we're thinking, to bring it to the full board, to have that other discussion before we move on. And it gives us some good appropriate times. I would like to ask if, and not to put anyone on the spot, if Regent McMichael, is there anything at this time that you would like to share?
Yes. as part of this committee, I would like to see if we could improve our transparency by only asking for candidates that feel safe in their positions, that they can put their candidacy in and give their employers well enough notice so that there's no hard feelings whether or not they stay or go. This works in their favor, too, as a means of negotiating a better salary if they are open with their employer and say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about taking a position in Nevada. And if you want to have first choice in countering their salary, you know, I'd be interested in listening to that. You know, so I don't understand why there has to be so much secretive and redactions when we should only ask for candidates that are open to their employers enough that they can go ahead and seek these positions. That way, we really don't need that much in the way of a consultant, especially if we're looking at a nationwide consultant that we might be spending $25,000 on, if that's correct in what I read so far. But you know, we can have more transparency and less redaction by asking candidates that feel secure in their position, where they can ask their or tell their employer that, look, somewhere down the road, I'm looking at a position in another institution. And if they feel comfortable in doing that, I think that we would get better candidates. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent McMichael. We appreciate your input. Regent Goodman.
Thank you, Regent Goodman, for the record. I just wanted to add a point that I really wish it would be such a wonderful way. I am an employer, and I am always happy to see people move forward and do great things. I think it's impractical, unfortunately, Regent McMichael, in this arena for us to expect for potential candidates to advise their existing employer that they are considering leaving. It's not as... unfortunately, it's not such a positive environment when you're leaving your current institution. And although I think it's ideally a wonderful idea, I don't think it's practical for this kind of search.
Thank you for your information. Do I have any other comments or questions in regards to what we would like to bring forward? And once I see that. We've asked all of our questions. I would like to open it up to our committee that is, or our regents that are not on the committee. So first I'll go to our committee members, and then I will reach out to anyone else. Okay, for those that are on the committee, be thinking about, I will open that up, and I see Regent Boylan, and I'll call on you in just a moment, to make sure before that final, this is over today, that we are, I've decided, if we're able to, move this forward to the full board. And if not, we can hold another meeting to make sure that everything is being taken care of. But it would be nice to be able to move forward today. Regent McMichael, did you have something else? Or you're good?
I'm good for right now.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Vice Chair Arascata.
Thank you, Chair Brager. I do have a few items I would like to put into the record or as suggestions. And bear with me because I hope I'm not going to get a little bit too wordy here. But a few of the items I feel that might be imperative for this entire process is try to get a buy-in for selection criteria to make a difference and a related to superior versus average performance. What I'm saying is it insists that the selection and the performance criteria focus on the attributes that predict success, and they're not easily trained. So essentially having a person or a candidate coming into the process or throwing their hat in the ring, have them already have the acumen to provide leadership. It's going to be most important when you have a person that can command a room, generate an immediate amount of respect, not just from the regents, from the presidents, and from the entire system, but have that person, but also insist that the criteria be maintained through the course of the search process. What that means, if we're going to start with a national search, let's do national search. We have to have that. It's going to cost a little bit more to do a national search than it is going to be a regional or state search. So we can't change the goalposts with that. But we need to have our own debrief of the search revealed a large program beyond the OML, potentially, to be the lack of involvement of the search committee and whole board in the process. So essentially put in their trust, our trust, the committee, and only having one person, which would be that search chair, intimately involved in the process, took a leap of trust. And it's often too large to make. Because having that one person, as in the person designated to lead the search, that person is often peppered with questions of insecurity of what's going on. And as it was previously mentioned by Councilor Wixom, if we have two regents in the search process, that'll violate OML. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Wixom.
Michael Wixom, for the record, the naming of two searches wouldn't violate the OML, but if the two regents then didn't follow the open meeting law, then that would be the issue. So you could name two searches, but you're creating an additional subcommittee. So just for purposes of clarification, the act of having two regents participate doesn't violate the law, But if then those two regents don't follow the open meeting law, that would be a violation of the open meeting law.
What about give two regents the opportunity to have a meet and greet with the candidates to include meals? For example, once candidates have been selected or identified, have every board member have the opportunity to have a meal or sit down coffee with the finalist candidates and their and or their partners or spouses, which may be very helpful, just to kind of make sure that there's a compatible relationship between everyone, that everyone is understanding that whatever, once again, the acumen and the knowledge and the experience that we, the Nevada System of Higher Education, is seeking in a chancellor, that that person has it not just in a textbook, but has the ability to recite it also.
Michael Wixon, for the record. Pardon me, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, sir, go ahead.
Michael Wixon, for the record. With respect to social engagements, they in and of themselves don't violate the open meeting law. You would just have to structure the social, and we've done that in the past many, many times. You would just have to structure the social engagements so that you didn't have a quorum of the board or a quorum of the committee that were part of the social engagements, number one. And number two, no deliberations should be part of the social engagement. So you can certainly do what you're suggesting under present board policy and under present open meeting law if it's properly structured.
With that properly fabricated structure, could you have the search firm create its own search committee made up of stakeholders that are representative of key stakeholder groups?
I would have to look at that issue closely. That's the first time that question has been directed to me. But if we're appointing a search committee and we're telling the search committee to appoint a committee, my initial reaction is that committee would be subject to the open meeting law, because it would be viewed as an effort to circumvent the open meeting law. So I wouldn't say that would work. But just to respond, if I may, Regent Brager, just to one other point, Regent Arascata, that you made earlier. One of the purposes of a properly structured profile, and the reason a good search committee will say take so much time with a search profile, is that the search profile in and of itself will resolve a lot of the screening issues that we were talking about. And that search profile is critical. And we talked, Regent Goodman talked earlier about the process of getting stakeholder involvement early on in the process, as did Chancellor Charlton. And that becomes critical. That's not just a perfunctionary exercise. That becomes the constitution, really, of the search, for want of a better phrase. So the profile you create becomes key. And that will alleviate a lot of concerns if it's properly structured.
Are you good, Vice Chair Arascata?
One other question, if I may, Regent Brager. What about having the search team members sign NDAs and participate in every aspect of the process, the application screen and the short and ongoing interviews? Is that something that's possible without having the overlap in the OML?
If I may respond, Michael Wixon, for the record. By NDA, you mean a non-disclosure agreement?
Yes, sir.
The non-disclosure agreement itself is not going to cure an open meeting law violation. And so that should not be used as a safe harbor in that regard. You may, from a policy perspective, have participants sign non-disclosure agreements, but that would be a policy issue, but it should not be viewed as a way to circumvent or cure an open meeting law issue.
Thank you for the clarity. Regent Brager, thank you for the opportunity.
You're welcome. Regent Goodman.
Thank you, Regent Goodman, for the record. I think it's also important to note that despite whatever we thought of this last search committee on our last search, I think that there's a lot of valuable information that was collected. There was a lot of data that was collected by this group. And I think moving forward, unless we're violating something, special counsel, I feel like we can use some of that information as a starting point and a foundation for moving forward.
If I may respond, Regent Brager, one other point of clarity from a policy perspective, based on my experience. Regent Goodman just hit, I think, on an important point, and that is we've never done in the system, as long as I've been around in the system, an evaluation of the search itself. So at the end, for want of a better phrase, you could do a debrief of the search. At the very last meeting, after you select the candidate, the next meeting, a good use of time, in my view, would be to evaluate the committee itself. What did we learn? What information did we garner? What did we learn about the search process? What did we learn about the position? Because there's incredible information that we've just let evaporate through the years because we haven't taken the time to catalog and understand what we've learned. And I think that's a critical point.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it. I am going to just state what Vice Chair Arascotta brought up. There would be very good ways, and we have done this in the past, and I'm going to just use as historical superintendent searches, that there are only seven of us, but you could do four or five that would meet for, you know, let's say you do a breakfast and a dinner so the person doesn't feel like they're just eating all the time, or you do just, you know, a cheese and crackers or something. But you could do one event that was for, you know, faculty and Senate committee members, which I think would be very, very good. You could do one that was for the public, and you could do one that was for the regents in, you know, three different, we'd have to do three different groups. But anyone that is really very interested, you want to make sure that they're vetted out by those that they're going to oversee and who's going to oversee them. And I think that would be very important this time. And we learn things along the way and we change things along the way. So as we mature as a board and come together as a board, we can do a better task as regents the more open that we are and the more we understand. It's okay to be different and it's okay to have different opinions, but come together as one when there's a majority. And I think that would make a big difference this go around. Is there any other comments or questions from the regents on the committee? Yes, may we get our chief?
Thank you, Chair Breger. I just wanted to add, in relation to the social gatherings, currently our process, we do have open forums, which are open to students, faculty, community, the public at large, to interact with the candidate in a somewhat less formal setting than an interview during a meeting. But we have been missing that social component for regents. And now we have some guidelines on how that could go forward. But we always have had open forums and an opportunity for folks to interact with the finalists.
Thank you for that. I do think that it is very important for those four components to be met during this process. And because if we do decide to vote with the full board, that it is an October to May or October to May type process when the vote would take place, that would give us plenty of time to have those, I'm hoping, three or four candidates that are willing to give their name. Nothing's worse than last man or woman standing. And I hope we do not ever get to that. And maybe we wouldn't continue on, and we'll have to see what that's like at the time. If there are no more questions at this time, I'd like to have a few minutes for those committee members regent members that are not on the committee, so that by about 10:10, that we could formalize what we'd like to take, if we're ready to go to the full board and give staff the opportunity to culminate what that agenda item would look like. If not, I will go to Regent Boylan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate it. I agree with what Regent McMichael said. We've got to stop this secrecy in hiring. We need to have someone who has the confidence in their present position to say, yes, I don't mind my current employers knowing I'm applying to, let's just say, UNLV, ENSHE. So I think that would be extremely important that we have someone and less of the secrecy. We are a public institution, and I know all the rules and regulations of why we should keep things secret or not. The second thing I would say is to Mr. Wixom, can you explain what you meant by deliberation, is it the same as discussion? In your mind, what's the difference between discussion and deliberation? Because the OML says we must not deliberate, but we can discuss. So help me there, please, sir. Thank you.
Michael Wixon, for the record. Practically speaking, there isn't much difference. And so I would just be cautious in that regard. So as we've discussed before, we try to be, as counsel to the board, circumspect with respect to the open meeting law for two reasons. The first reason is to protect the integrity of the decisions of the board so that the decisions of the board are not called into question. But the second reason is we're trying to protect the board and the board members. And so we always err on the side of caution, because the penalties for violating the open meeting law are not just calling into questions the decisions of the body itself, but the penalties can be very personal to board members. And so in that regard, getting back to your original question, I don't think there really, from my perspective, is any difference between discussion and deliberation.
Regent Boylan.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Regent DiCarlo.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Chair Brager. I just have a couple comments, no questions. I really believe that a good search starts with openness, and it was stated earlier. And the key part here to me is really the search profile, and that search profile really needs to be done in an open environment with the advisory members of the board. And I see the advisory members as very esteemed members of their community, or they have such a position that they probably have hired many people themselves. And I have seen just very, very keen and great observations of advisory members. And I don't think their role needs at all to be dismissed. And they should help build this profile. And I think the profile truly needs to be built in the open. I think a questionnaire that we were required to do, that I personally spent hours on. I mean, I really did. And then I didn't even see some of my points even put forward, which I thought were really key because we're talking about the future of higher ed. Anyway, that could all be done much better openly. And the other part that I really have a problem with, in the 10 searches I've been part of on this board, I had never, ever seen spouses brought in, or partners, or whatever you want to call them. It's, to me, it's not appropriate. We're not hiring that person. Everybody's going to come forward and say great things about their partner. I mean, to me, that was just, it was pretty meaningless. And I didn't get the point. And I can say my husband had a 22-year military career. There was a time in the military where the spouse was part of the evaluation, and that got ruled not proper, and it's never been that way since. And I just think the person's there, whoever that is, on their own, certainly their spouse is going to be party behind, or their partner, whatever you want to call them, is going to be behind them, cheering them on. But I we got a lot of public comment on. That didn't look good to have that occur. And it was, I thought it was kind of shocking that that happened. So I would just go back and say that the advisory part is very important, and building that profile is very important to our openness and transparency. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments, Regent DiCarlo. And all comments have been really what I think came out of our last search. And those are difficult times. I think doing the search committee, search consultant in public is important. I think having the stakeholders and advisory committee be in a meeting with, the regents to formulate what we're looking for in a chancellor gives us, we have the time now that we're starting this now, and I think that's very important. I'd like to know if there is any other comments at this time, and if not, if there is, and I'm going to ask this to Council Wixom, would it be in the form of comments or a motion? Because we've not really done this. We've not really had this form of a committee that I've seen in the last number of years that I've watched the region. So I want to make sure we're doing this correctly.
Thank you, Michael Wixom, for the record. You have two options. The first option is you could direct staff to create changes to the present policy that would be taken directly to the board at your direction. That would be the first option. The second option is you can direct staff to create policies that they would bring back to this committee for further discussion and input. And so there are advantages and disadvantages, practically speaking, to each methodology. The first methodology certainly would expedite the process, and it also opens up the process to the entire board. The second process would take a bit more time, but it would allow you to refine your comments and to think more deeply about other changes. For example, if we come back to you with changes, the changes we may make may not entirely reflect what you think you've told us to do. And so the advantage to the second process is that it would allow you to be a governor over what we've done to make sure that what we've done is responsive to what you want.
Thank you for those comments. I think that was very helpful, and I wanted to make sure we're clear. It's an open meeting. I would like to know the pleasure of the board. I would state that the two-step process would be very accommodating and make sure we're very clear in everything that we want to do, and then bring it to the board for the large discussion. And I think it has to be a very open discussion. We're hearing that over and over. I think that's exciting to know that we can be open, transparent, speak well with each other, and move through getting to the whoever the actual chancellor committee would be, knowing that we would have dynamic results from all 13 of us. Is there anyone that thinks differently on that? I'm open to hearing from anyone. And then we could clarify a couple of things we want to make sure. I believe they've heard what we want, but I'd like to make sure on a couple that it's been very clear. Anyone from the actual committee that would like to make a statement at this time?
Yes, this is Regent McMichael.
Please go ahead, sir.
I would like to make sure that if we're going to use any advisory group, that we first look within NSHE. I believe that the $25,000 could be well utilized elsewhere, and we have enough brain power within NSHE to put together a group, and it should cost zero. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Regent Downs.
Thank you, Chair Brager. I'd like the two-step process as well, just because I'm honestly feeling a little bit of pressure looking at the next agenda has information for us to bring forward to them. So I'm feeling like, whoa, can we do this? Because I'd like to explore a few more concepts a little further. And may I elaborate at this time, or is that the limit of where you want the comments to be made?
No, you're more than welcome to bring forth anything, and staff will make sure that they have those comments from all of us. I'm going to bring one forward, so I'd love to hear what you have to say.
I should know if we're doing this in phases, but if I continue then, a couple of questions I have. One, I want to say in support of what Regent McMichael had stated, and Regent Boylan also agreed. I have this curiosity, and I know I've been hearing for years that we get the best candidates when it's a search where we don't release the information. And there could be truth to that. I have this curiosity, what would happen if we did have a search where people were out and open and there could be an open discussion about that. And I believe if that was the case, we would have a meeting where we would choose the final candidates together with all the candidates being known. And I believe that isn't that the purpose of the separate decision-making to be done in order to keep those candidates not publicized. But I have another question for Mr. Wixom. Is it possible if we were to stick with somewhat of the current structure where the chair of the committee works with the chancellor and maybe the chancellor and the search committee in finding candidates, finalists to bring forward, is it possible to expand that to some of the advisory group members without violating the open meeting law, if it doesn't include any more regents?
Michael Wixon for the record. May I respond? If the advisory committee members are appointed by the board, then, again, it harkens back to the observation that I made before. The appointment of the advisory committee members wouldn't be the violation, but the advisory members and the board would then be subject to the open meeting law. So to the extent that you include the advisory committee in that regard, it becomes a subcommittee of the board, and then that subcommittee would be subject to the open meeting law. Is that responsive to your question, Regent Dale?
That is. Thank you for the clarification. I'm sorry to keep asking these questions.
No, they're helpful for
you
me.
You made that earlier, and I didn't put it all together, but thank you.
Any other questions from the committee members? Before I go to any non-Regent committee members, I would like to make sure that if everyone agrees, and that's something that we can do, that the one change that we did discuss, which is on page 9, item G, is that how we go about the search consultant. And that would be that we would be able to ask questions and then determine what we would bring to the full board, whoever that is. I'm saying we right now because we're at that point. Whoever the actual search committee is would be able to identify the consultants by doing an RFP and then determining who is going to move forward. That would be after we have had, whether it's the Senate chairs or whoever those stakeholders are going to be, and that we have a good discussion with the next, it appears it'll be the next chair, would be involved in regards to making sure that we have as open of a process with the open meeting law to the point of how we determine we would actually do the candidates. So that's one of the things I'd like to see have happen or caught so that we can all discuss it. If there is nothing else from our committee members, I would then open it up to our regents. We have about 10 more minutes, and I really like to stay on target and make sure our meeting concludes at the proper time. Since we have answered everything from the committee members, anyone else from our regents would like to ask a question? Seeing none, I am going to now go to... Pardon me? Oh, I thought... Regent Downs, did you have something else?
Yeah, I didn't want
to... Oh, sorry, I missed that. I apologize.
No, you didn't do anything wrong. But I would also like to address the timeline that Council Wixon brought up, the 1.5.4D, how it's ambiguous on the timeline for starting a search if we were notified that a vacancy is going to be in a year or a year and a half or 2 years, when we would begin that search. And can we address something there as well, that a search will be conducted, I don't know, we'll begin the process 10 months prior to the vacancy occurring. I'd like to see something like that addressed in some policy changes, if possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Downs. And I think clarifying that is very important so that we're meeting. We have heard from Senate committee members and professors how that October to May timeline, and I do respect the fact that that would probably, in this instance, be very, very good. But, of course, I'm only one person. But if we did that and ended up in May with the actual person, then they would have that lead time when not very many people are on campus and be able to get themselves, like, what are their first 10 things or what are their 100 days? And so thank you for that. If there are no other comments or questions at this time, I am going to go on to let me get myself where I need to be. If there is any, pardon me?
I think it would be appropriate.
Yes, sir.
It would be appropriate now, if the inclination of the committee is to go with option two, as I outlined it, to entertain a motion from the committee for the approval of option two, and then a direction to staff and to special counsel to go through and craft amendments to present policy and bring them back to the committee for your review. That was my understanding of the general will of the committee. If that's correct, then that would be the appropriate motion, I believe, at this point.
Okay, I appreciate that. I'm going to let our chief of staff speak.
Just to note, Council, this is agendized as information only.
Well, then we can't do that. But
we can bring that back.
Okay.
So we could ask for another meeting to correct?
Yes, certainly. And then we hear the direction.
And we could do that new business, actually.
Thank you. That's okay. Right. That would be the appropriate forum.
Okay.
It's new business.
Thank you. That's where I was going, but we'll do it now. Any new business from committee members at this time? Regent Downs, would this be where you'd want to ask for your second meeting?
I would request a second meeting that we can formalize some of these changes to be made that can be brought to the full board in the end.
Regent Goodman. Thank you, Regent Downs.
Just in response to that, just for note, if we're able to do that expeditiously so it can take place before the next board meeting so that it can be placed on that agenda, that would be really great if we can just move it forward quickly.
And is that something for staff? Are you able to, if that comes forward that way, can I say this? I want to make sure I don't break any rules here. That request would be able to take place before the next board meeting so that we can then get it on that meeting. Anything there, Mr. Wixom, counsel?
No, I mean, we can certainly do that. I think my understanding is that I would undertake some initial changes to the policy. I would review those with General Counsel Martinez at the Chancellor and Chief of Staff Nikolajowski, bring it back to you for your review.
Okay.
And as we set up the agenda, and then you can set the time for this committee.
Okay.
To do a final review, and we can do that within a time frame so that it would. I think you're talking about the next quarterly meeting, correct?
No, before that.
In January?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
That would be tight, but we'll do our best.
I have complete faith in them.
It would be me. That's why.
And you. I have complete faith in you. If you need, you can give us direction as you move through that if you need more time or if you don't. And so why don't we.
We'll consult together.
Okay, there you go. Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it. If there are no other comments or concerns that need to be brought forward at this time for where we're moving forward on the double meeting, to be able to, before we bring it to the board, to make sure that we have what staff has heard today with the clarifications that have been given. Okay.
This is Regent McMichael.
Yes, sir.
I believe that Regent Borland had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, with your permission.
Okay, if you could, I don't mean this disrespectfully, if you could be brief because I want to meet our time frame.
I totally understand. Thank you so much. And thank you, Regent McMichael. I was going to change my mind, but I'm concerned about what's the hurry? Why are we rushing things again like we do so often? And then we end up in a pickle, should we say. So what's the hurry? Can someone tell me that, Madam Chair?
There is no hurry. What we are doing is making sure that we're able to set up the right stakeholders, the right people. Time goes by very quickly. And if we want to meet an October, May timeline, we're not rushing it. We just want to make sure staff has what we need. We look at that. We bring it back to this committee. So it is a two-step. We're not going to rush anything. We want full transparency. And that's what's going to be happen. So thank you for your comments, sir. We're now going to go on to public comment. Is there any public comment in GBC?
There is no public comment at GBC at this time.
Thank you very much. Is there any public comment in the system office in Reno?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. If we could hear from them now.
Kent Irvin, ERVI, and Nevada Faculty Alliance. A question I had that I didn't quite hear an answer to during this discussion is whether the Board of Regents can delegate to other officials the authority to appoint either a search committee or an evaluation committee for an RFP. I have experience with the State of Nevada on another board under NRS 287.04345 or NRS 287.338 of a process, particularly for evaluation committees for hiring a vendor like a search consultant. That particular procedure allows the evaluation committee in that case to bring a recommendation or the final scoring for an RFP to the public body for a decision. There is an exception to the open meeting law on that, which would have to be adapted to the current situation, but it does allow a process where you have a separate group with the authority to do the initial screening, or in the case of an RFP, the evaluation, and then bring that information to the board in the open meeting process. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Is there any other comments in Reno? Seeing none.
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Seeing now comments in Las Vegas. If there are no comments in Las Vegas, are there any public comments on the phone?
There are no callers at this time.
Thank you so much. I just want to thank the committee for all the work that they've done and the public for their comments, and we will adjourn this meeting.